Good evening. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Mr. Michael Pierce, President JetPay, and Mr. Joshua Dodd, Senior VP, Univis Bank and Trust. Welcome, gentlemen. This evening, we are going to review the results of the Greater Chamber of Commerce Cameron Afshar Survey of Local Businesses, which was conducted in January 2019. Just a little background, we have been doing this since 1998. So we have a good idea about recessions, growth, recoveries, all of that. In January, business sentiment index in the Valley dropped from the highs reached back in October last year. However, still about 5.4% above January of last year. And while all indices gave back some of their October gains, the indices for hiring are riding higher than they were back in 2005-2006. Well, gentlemen, what do you guys think? Michael, this just is at your wheelhouse.
It is indeed. Yeah, so we're seeing this trend play out in real time with our customers. You know, being a human resources and payroll company here in the Valley since 1971, we've seen quite a few cycles. You know, I remember very fondly, I think we all do, 2005 and six, with some explosive growth in the jobs market. And I absolutely think, you know, the indices are showing exactly what we're seeing, the real pain that the businesses not only here in the Valley, but around the country, frankly, are really feeling with finding great quality talent and retaining that talent in the organization. So there's no question this is a real challenge right now. At the same time, exciting to see that the economy's doing so well that everybody's trying to grow and add jobs.
All right. Well, Josh, for businesses to be able to expand and hire people, they need liquidity. And there comes the banker. What do you see?
Well, I'm seeing actually some pretty strong balance sheets. I'm seeing revenue growth year over year from a mix of my business customers across the Valley. Where I used to hear about healthcare being a concern as an expense, to Michael's point, it is by far, in a way, it is hiring. Doesn't matter across industries, particularly truck drivers, and these are usually local delivery drivers. I do have a trucking company, but these are usually people that go out and back for the day. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a distributor or you're delivering building materials, that is a major concern about finding qualified folks that they can afford to hire. The revenues are there, the business is there, especially with contractors, but finding the people to do the jobs remains the number one challenge.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing the same thing, Josh, in skilled trades in general. You know, many of our clients that are in the trade business, in manufacturing, looking for, and they're trying to attract, right? Today you have the millennials, fringennials, whatever you want to call them, right? The folks that are on the fringe. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to attract them and make their industry attractive. The businesses are doing well. They're financially stable, to your point. The challenge that they're finding is finding good people and attracting people into those jobs. And, you know, I think that's going to continue to play out. You see a shift towards those types of businesses moving away from, you know, paper and moving more to technology to attract a younger talent pool. Mm-hmm. They want to be working with mobile devices. They want to be working, you know, in an automated world and digital first kind of strategy. So we're seeing that play out with the use of technology when it comes to hiring, when it uses technology in terms of employee engagement. But what's unfortunate a little bit, and the good news is the balance sheets are there to support it, but it's a little bit of a dichotomy in the sense that you're having to take probably a little bit lesser level of talent than you'd like and pay a little bit more than you'd like. So there's a little bit of a push and a pull happening there, if that makes sense. So we're seeing that.
So, Michael, you are seeing increase in actual wages.
Yeah, I think it's inherently happening. I think in certain categories more so than others. Again, you're seeing skilled trades go up. The demand is driving that. You're seeing the same thing happen in anything that's revenue driving. So you're seeing, you know, compensation plans be redesigned in the sales professions and marketing professions because everyone's trying to continue to drive growth, you know, on the the heels and sort of the backs of a strong sentiment, even though sentiment, I know we're talking about, is declined a little bit, it's still generally very strong, I think, here in the Valley and again nationally.
Yes, it's very strong. It's just not as high as it was back in last October. And we talked about that, Josh, and the skilled size side. One of the most interesting ones is need for welders as such a straightforward thing. And you have a personal experience, somebody
sure.
you know.
My wife's cousin actually did the LCTI and then Pentec, which is part of the Penn State system, for 2 years. And I remember last May he graduated on a Sunday, interviewed that week and had a job on a Friday. He has since moved. He's now a welder with Air Products. Great wage for a young person, lots of overtime. He's not even 21 years old yet. Yeah. And it's just been phenomenal. He's already on his second job within the year, and a big step up. So.
Market is moving a lot more toward a dichotomy, toward one segment being the skilled people like welders and skilled truck drivers. The other segment would be highly technical people. The in-between, some education is no longer as valuable as it used to be. Very few companies use as many clerks as they used to because of the automation. The need for a little bit of knowledge is no longer that interesting. At least that's the theory. Michael, do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. And what you're finding is particularly in the mid-market and larger employers, whether they've had strong programs around succession planning and talent development or not, they're moving quickly in that direction because you're realizing it's hard to go out and find the people openly in the market. You know, so they have to grow their own, so to speak. They have to develop the talent in-house. And, you know, some organizations have been very adept and, you know, have done a nice job of that over the years, and many are starting to sort of quickly figure it out. So we're seeing a lot of demand for talent management programs, assistance with designing ways to develop talent inside of an organization, plan succession, and create, you know, a pathway and a bench, so to speak, for, you know, the future, so that they're not only having to go out to the market to find it. And that plays off against some of the things that I know, you know, we'll talk about in a minute, with is there is a shift in sort of the demographics of the workforce, right? So as more and more are approaching retirement age or even working past what has been traditional retirement age, the need to have that, you know, young talent to follow behind and use that mentoring skill to transition is higher than I've ever seen in my 5 years in human capital management.
I think even the retention, it's not just Google that has to do things to keep their to retain their workforce any longer. It's you know, I've seen more lavish holiday parties from my clients where they're having good times with the spouses and the families, or more of the non-financial type things to keep them, you know, on the team building side, so that they're not just going across the street for, you know, another dollar per hour.
Mm. Actually, one of the very interesting process that it's coming out of this, as you, Michael, confirmed, the increase in wages, the national averages on wage is not going up as much as most economists expect it to go up. And you alluded to it that one of the factors and one of the reasons is that because of the change in age, and we were going to talk about that later on, if somebody who has already retired from one or two jobs just wants a job, just not to be idle, will accept a lot lower wages than somebody who is really looking for a job as a only source of income. And as a result, we see also the same dichotomy in terms of wages, because there are people who take jobs as part-time or as a supplement, but at the age of 65 plus. And as a result, the average number, these are legitimate employees, so it falls into the average numbers. And we see that wages are moving a lot slower than everybody looks at this market and says it should actually move a lot faster. And this brings us to our plans for businesses' indication of what are they planning to do in terms of hiring in the future. in October, we had the highest level of plans for future hiring than we have seen, even going back through the boom of 2004, 2006. That is sort of tempering somewhat. Actually, it did drop a little bit in January. And my guess is that maybe because the availability is not there, and businesses thinking, if I plan to hire 20 people last quarter and I could only hire three, it doesn't make sense to plan to hire 25 people. There are not as many available. And particularly when we get to the specialties that they need. Employment, overall employment in the Valley, however, and it's very intriguing, it's not rising as fast as the national average. No, it is rising at a pretty healthy pace, but at the national average, it is just an explosive growth of employment that in the Valley is not as much. And part of that, my guess is that because these numbers include also part-time employees, that segment is expanding and it not expanding as fast in the Valley. What do you see, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of conversations with clients around flexible, you know, work scenarios for their employee base. So whether you're actually formally looked at as part-time or they're just creating more flexible work environments because of the talent pool shortages, you know, playing off of a comment you made a few minutes ago, Cameron, it's as with some of the you know, aged workforce taking lower level jobs, it creates both a great opportunity for employers to have highly skilled, sometimes over qualified talent performing jobs. But it's more of a band-aid, you know, temporary fix to a bigger problem, right? Because eventually that runs out, you go from a significant skill drop off potentially without anything behind it, and you still haven't really solved the root problem, which is the shortage in the pool, as we talked about. So, you know, so we're seeing that, but the flexible work hours allows people to kind of create some scenarios, work from home. We're seeing a lot more of that. And, you know, even geographic. So, you know, it doesn't help us necessarily here specifically in the Valley, but if you're an employer based in the Valley, having folks that can work remotely and telecommute, as they would say, from other parts in the country where they may have, you know, they may live, and you can get that talent, that's, you're seeing that strategy play out a little bit more too.
I know that the in Harrisburg, the governor is considering a minimum wage of $12 per hour currently, and New Jersey, I think, just passed theirs, which is phased in from 10, I think, a dollar additional per year, eventually increasing to $15. As I drive down 22 and I see the billboards for, you know, the warehouse jobs, I see they all start well above that. Yes. And I just wonder, you know, there's certainly people that would benefit from that, but it seems like, you know, with very little skills, you could actually already achieve a wage much higher than that today. So I guess I wonder if there's a mismatch in the skill set that's available when you look at your data as to, you know, who's available in the talent pool.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point, and we see that. In fact, we had a real scenario recently where a client of ours was losing some key talent inside their organization, and they found that some of them were going to these, you know, essentially jobs. They were going from a structured job environment where they had a lot of thinking to do during the day and being paid a certain wage, where they can go into an environment where they could not do a lot of thinking in terms of packaging and transportation, but be paid a bit more money. So their quality of life in their mind improved. They got good benefits. So whether the legislation directs it or not, I think, you know, the businesses are going to have to respond to what's happening in real time out in the marketplace.
Yeah, and employees earning more would automatically result in spending more. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the factors that impacts the economy, and people very often overlook that part. The classic case of that textbook, we all teach it, is Henry Ford when he started paying his employees
right
at a rate where when he talked with the bankers, he discovered that if they get that kind of income, then the bankers will lend them enough money to buy the cars that they're making. So he designed it that way, and the stories are that he was shocked that how much his revenues went up as a result of actually increasing his cost. That's the part that very often people don't look when they become very short-sighted on instant events right now, not looking at the impact on the economy. And one of the biggest problems with minimum wage is this step function factor that they put in it. My guess, and many economists write about this, that we should set something tied to inflation and let it rise with inflation over time. And then this wouldn't become a political football every right. few years mm-hmm. and argument about it. And that would take care of itself.
I think the great news right now is you have, you know, really, you know, high employment, and then you have low gas prices, and you combine that, and people are actually saving again. They've kind of deleveraged, mm-hmm. and that kind of insulates them and gives them, yeah. you know, that extra comfort that they have some money in the bank, and they don't need to make that change just for that extra dollar an hour.
Yeah,
it's one of the exceptions that we see in terms of inflation and employment. Historically, it was assumed that as unemployment drops, inflation goes up. And when unemployment becomes very low, inflation gets to be very high. And part of that was the 20th century market system, which there were all the nation states competed with one another based on tariffs and stuff like that. Now that we live in more of a global environment, if demand for a product goes up in one country, well, everybody else ships the stuff there. And when there are no or very low tariffs, that automatically works. It's as if we're shipping stuff between different mm-hmm. states here. Many European countries are closer to one another than different states in the United States are. So shipping is not an issue. So prices stabilizes in countries like Italy that you always used to see very high inflations. It is significantly lower than it ever was. And that experience is very unusual because of those factors. These changes, however, affect everybody, everything else in our economy. And one of which is, of course, the monetary policy of the Fed, which was based on those historical data. And because all of that was tied to the notion that you raise one, the other one will drop, and so on. So Fed was always so concerned about its inability to reduce unemployment too much because it was worried inflation will go too high. Now we are in that too much. The unemployment is at full employment level, and inflation is almost unheard of. And Josh, your reference to oil prices and gasoline prices is the trend that we will continue to see, and it will go ahead simply because we are technologically moving away from the large gas-burning cars to more electric, and in Europe, countries that now saying no more gas-powered cars should be manufactured. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we go to our first break.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old-time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Michael Pierce, President, JetPay, Joshua Dodd, Senior VP, Univest Bank. Gentlemen, welcome, and we continue our discussion from the first segment. One of the very, very interesting things that this survey of businesses, the January survey of businesses, it showed was the significant change in the prospect of hiring and laying off. The percent of businesses participating in our survey were laying off employees is way less than what it was during the boom years of 2004, 2006. And percent of those who are actually increasing hiring went above that, but it is coming back to the same level. But this is a very interesting concept in terms of stabilization. Do you see the differences since you have been in this environment for a long time?
Yeah, I think the general trend, absolutely. Mm. There's certain industries, like always, that you're going to see a high turnover rate because of the transient nature of the workforce. So we're seeing that in hospitality and restaurant business as an example. You know, there's going to be some of that churn, whether that's, you know, because they're working multiple jobs and eventually they need to settle in, whether it's because they get attracted away for better wages, better working hours, shifts, whatever it might be. So we are seeing that there, you know, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, that there's still some layoffs and turnovers happening. But certainly the trend is going downwards there, exactly the data showing. Mm-hmm. And then as we talked about in the first segment, there's tremendous amount of demand to find people. And it doesn't matter where you're part-time, full-time, industry, vertical segments, it doesn't matter. Everyone's with the same challenge. There's a talent war out there, and you know, everyone, it's an arms race to find the best people that you can to fill the position.
Mm-hmm. So. I think when you look at, you don't have the migration of employees to different hotbeds across the country like you had. Particularly contracting comes to mind when they're building Las Vegas or the Sun Belt in Florida. Now there's jobs everywhere. You don't need to pick up and leave to go find them. It's particularly the aging population in contractors today. I think the average age on a job site is over 50 years old. And the folks in those positions, you know, because they're more physical and labor intensive, you know, they typically tend to retire, you know, on time at 65 or a little bit ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that's a particular challenge when you look at, you know, cost to construct.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's Michael. Does your data shows where the new employees are coming? Because obviously Lehigh Valley has reached very, very close to its maximum capabilities now.
Sure.
So people have to be migrating in because the number of hiring is pretty large.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're attracting talent out of the Philadelphia market. There's a little bit of, again, a push and pull there because as Philadelphia is responding to that down in the greater Philadelphia area. They're increasing wage rates to keep people in that market. Yeah, but we do see people coming up and driving further north into the valley from down into the Westchester, King of Prussia, and sort of greater Philly markets. We're seeing a lot of that coming over the border in New Jersey as well. You know, we're obviously the valley being close, you know, nicely situated between about an hour and 15 minutes from both New York and give or take from both New York and Philadelphia. So we are seeing folks, you know, coming over and, you know, applying for the positions here. And I think in the past, and that's a good shift because in the past we probably saw a bit more of the opposite. We probably saw folks leaving the valley to go and take what they perceived to be higher waged or better, you know, jobs outside the valley. And because there's such a good demand here and growth here, you know, they're being able to keep talent here or attract it even from other areas.
Quality of life has definitely improved in the Lehigh Valley. I just wonder if we're ready for the New Jersey influx 2.0. So what I kind of described before recession is, you know, the people that, you know, were kind of tired of New Jersey costs and they, you know, were maybe 10 years away from retirement. So they'd sell their home in New Jersey, build one in Pennsylvania where they didn't have to worry about maintenance for a little while with a new home, kind of bank the rest of the money and commute until their time was up and they didn't feel like working any longer. I wonder if this year, with a lot of the tax changes, you know, the fact that they have personal income tax at almost double our rate, and you know, some of the phase out on home mortgage interest deduction and the cap on real estate taxes that you're able to deduct, I wonder if this is the year where, you know, people file still in New Jersey and they sort of pay attention a little bit more, and if they were on the fence or they're considering a move across the river, if this is the year that happens, and that would be considerable for you know, for our housing values. Housing is already a challenge with lack of supply, but, you know, could be, you know, mean something for local home builders.
That's true. That's true. Actually, the first one that I remember was 1987, 88, where Highway 78 was connected. And all of a sudden, people go from here to New York, and that cut back probably 20 minutes or 25 minutes from the travel, instead of going through Easton and Phillipsburg. And then mm-hmm. in the morning, that was busy because everybody was moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. Now you're on a highway and you just move on. And that changed a lot. We tracked that actually for a client bank. We did the study, and after 2 years, they allowed us to publish the results of the study, because we looked at the number of people who came, the impact of it on the housing prices in the areas. And it's very simple. They were all the outlets from 78 that you come in, one right at the beginning near Easton, and one at the western end of Allentown, and was these two places. And we tracked the data going back to late 1970s to see how they have moved with different things, and this was a complete change. One of the other events that is happening around us as well is the concept of change in mode of production. Now, every time economy goes through a recession, we see that businesses learn to do different things. They learn, for example, from having to lay off people that maybe they don't need as many people. They learn from having to buy new machinery that they may take the place of number of people. Now, one of the things I have seen very interesting to me is all this tech, not I love to watch technology stuff, a 3D printer that the example in the film, they built a house. Of course, it's just a big room. But the 3D printer basically went around and over time built the room, and they had to put a roof on it. But the building part of it, the straightforward process of it, was done by a 3D printer. The technology is the same as it does with building a plastic stuff, and now that they also build metal. But the notion that they can build something that way, that will change a lot of characteristic of the production. The warehousing that we are seeing now expanding is faster than anything else in the valley. We have warehouses who are 100% automated. It could be 1 million square feet, and three people could run it. They exist. It is just that they're still cheaper to hire people and have it not 100% automated, maybe 50 or 80% automated. But that's the direction we are going. And long-haul drivers, truck drivers, is one of the other jobs that is also on the same block, because the machines are now totally capable of doing it. A lot of these things are basically due to getting the permits done, and some stuff like that. I was talking with the guy from Amazon and asking what are they doing to the drones and stuff. He said, "Oh, our lawyers are working on it." I said, "What, are you done with the engineering?" He said, "Yes, literally. We are just needing to get clearances and stuff like that." And they were worried that, you know, you have a drone flying over somebody's property, they could be shooting it down, and those things to clarify and make those processes work.
Well, certainly there's been a shift. Retail, I mean, it probably could have a whole discussion about retail, and you know, everyone has kind of transitioned over, and we just had the holiday season. While it's, you have the experiential shopping where you want to support your local businesses to find that, you know, unique gift or get that advice. When it comes to commodity-driven things, you know, we've kind of traded out the sales clerk for Tom, and Tom's my UPS driver, and I know him by first name because I see him several times per week. So, you know, it's just a shift where Tom's the guy. I wonder, you know, I don't know everything about the drones. I know they're certainly coming, but I still think they'd have to come to my community, maybe park centrally in my development. Mm-hmm. Tom loads the drones, and the drones take it from, you know, down the street to my front door. I don't think they're going to be flying from Fogelsville to my house, sure. You know, just for one package. But
But technically,
certainly
they would,
it'll get easier.
They would use the right of ways and the power lines to be able to fly, and they have, I guess, 30 minutes capability of flying.
Okay.
And yeah, they're for them it is so cheap that they basically are all electric stuff. So the investment is in the equipment and stuff, and then it goes just straight there.
I mean, I think you're going to see automation continue to drive, towards the future of what transformation in business, right? Yeah. So you're seeing it. Amazon, certainly an innovator in the space. We're talking about, logistics in their regard, getting, Tom, in your case, right? Mm-hmm. Getting your packages to you. And we are, we've kind of become numb. I mean, we haven't gotten it quite here in the Valley yet, but if you're in New York or you're in California and LA area, you can get delivery within 60 minutes of a package from Amazon for something that you want. So the convenience, the being able to get something, because we live in an economy where we want instant gratification, right? So you're certainly seeing that shift, but certain businesses, even in retail, they're adjusting, they're creating experiences. You're seeing more things like the Promenade in Center Valley starting to create more of an outdoor place and a destination where you can come and shop and eat and entertain. I think as you see more of those things happening, here in the Valley, as you see more of those things happening around the country, it'll temper that for a while, but eventually the technology is going to start to feed. And even on traditional business, we're a knowledge business. I mean, AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning, BI, business intelligence, sort of the big data kind of move, it's starting to replace some of the traditional need for folks to do critical thinking, in place of a computer. I don't believe it'll ever fully replace it in all functions, but there's certainly, being able to bring data to the surface faster and help them make better decisions is definitely a trend. So it creates new opportunities in the marketplace for new types of jobs, new types of categories, education, and growth.
Yeah. A lot of new jobs created because of these changes that we are seeing here, and also the shift will be in terms of increasing efficiency, making things go faster, and hopefully better as well. That we don't know what they're gonna. Yeah, we're gonna get our products from Amazon very fast, as if we live in a very large city. But this is the process that we are looking at, and in terms of technology, as it is very, very rapidly improving, we're gonna experience the shift, and slowly our educational institutions will learn to adjust to that and train people for the new environment. This thing would be always lagging because of the very, very rapid pace at which this change is taking place. Mm-hmm. We never have been in an environment that changed this fast. And the only thing that is constant here is the change that is happening to us. Other than that, everything else changes. Okay, this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we are going to our second break.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guest this evening is Josh Dodd from Unifest Bank, and Michael Pyers, who was with us the first two segments, got tired of the discussion. No, he had to go to a meeting and had to excuse himself and leave. Josh, we talked about the change in the economy and the fact that we are really in a very big boom. Our survey shows that businesses are also considering it as such and acting in that fashion. A very rapid increase in hiring, and The only place we see some hesitation is when we get to plans for future expenditures. Purchasing has gone up. But when we talk about the next 6 months, we see that the percentages are dropping, both in terms of the number of companies as well as how much they want to increase. I have to emphasize, we are still on the increased side. Businesses are planning to increase their expenditures, but the enthusiasm of the last couple of years is being tempered somewhat. And we design an indicator we call the momentum, which calculates the direction and the strength of movement of our different indices in the model. And planned purchases have been showing a drop for a while now. So we expect that businesses will temper a little bit their purchasing as in the next 6 months. Not in terms of, obviously, not that they're going to go negative. It is just that they increase it by a smaller amount. Josh, have you seen any sign of that?
Well, Cameron, capital expenditures have been very robust for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And as we've been in the expansion and for a couple of years, and whereas we've really felt it, the boom that you suggest, companies have been purchasing that whole time. So they've been automating, they've been buying additional equipment. What I like to see is when it's net new, when it's not just replacing, for instance, rolling stock trucks, right. But they're actually, increasing the number, not mm-hmm. just, changing out a third of the fleet every year. That's really nice to see, and I am still seeing that. The other factor I think that maybe has tempered it or has just decreased the seasonality of it. So I think your survey is probably looking at the last quarter of 2018. With some of the expense provision from the new tax law, you don't need to really wait until the end of the year. You can actually take those expenses and expense mm-hmm. equipment throughout the year, not just waiting to see how your profitability is coming. So I've seen more acquisitions earlier in last mm-hmm. year than I've seen, and I think it's just companies have invested so much over the past few years that maybe they don't need to make such a substantial investment now.
It's interesting that we did the survey in January, and that was during the partial government shutdown. And we did not see, we saw some drop in business sentiment across the board, but nothing very, very large. During the same period, University of Michigan study of consumer sentiment shows a much larger drop in consumer sentiment. What do you attribute that to?
It's hard to get inside the head of the consumer, but I know they've been very active. I think it was a good quarter for retail sales because they felt pretty good about employment. I don't know what to read into that. Mm-hmm. Potentially, it's there's been a pause on housing, which is usually a consumer's biggest purchase, and that's because interest rates have climbed, and you have that big generation, the millennials, many of whom are still renting. I think they've initially didn't buy homes as quickly because of the economy, and when they came out of entered the workforce, it wasn't as robust. I think a lot of them are overdue to either move out of basements of parents or to move out of apartments to their first mm-hmm. home. And I think the low inventory and through last year we've had the rate increases kind of tempered that a little bit. Rates are still, historically they're still really good. It's a good place to be. On the overnight rates, we've had 8 rate increases since December of 2016, and then 4 of those came last year, where the Federal Reserve moved. Still, relatively low interest rates, mm-hmm. But hopefully we go into the spring. We've seen interest rates on the fixed rate side decreasing. If you look at the 10-year treasury, that has actually dropped about 0.5% since October, and that has an influence on mortgage rates. So hopefully as we go into the spring, which is traditionally the best season for purchases, mm-hmm. we see more people interested in more inventory, more importantly, available, so that the prices don't continue to just push up and out of people's
range. As you would be telling me, it's not the price alone, it's just a monthly payment, which is a combination of interest rate and the mortgage rate and the price that determines if a person can buy something. And since mortgage rates were going up through 2017 and all the way through actually October, I think, that basically increased the effective cost to consumers to buy a house. The change has come after, actually during the fourth quarter of last year, that we have observed that mortgage rates dropping a little bit, and your mention of 10 years as well dropping. As we look at the, for example, even 1 year paper shows a little drop, but if we get to the 3 month one, there is no drop, it's almost flat as it was. How do you read that?
Well, the data speaks for itself, and you have a combination of higher prices and higher rates, and it is all about the mortgage payment, as you mentioned. Hopefully, we need more supply of homes for sale, and we're going into the spring so far. We're still in the winter months, but we are going in with lower interest rates than where we ended last year. And hopefully that makes for better home sales this year. I think certainly anything that was on the market, people did rush to purchase. I think Lehigh Valley, the listings on average were under 40 days. I'm a big proponent of when somebody buys a home or moves, the ripple effect that it has in our local economy. The durable goods that they acquire, these things are traditionally heavier. The refrigerators and the washing machines, not that they don't put them on a boat and ship them, but the likelihood that, they're made domestically, or at least you have people delivering them, which creates a job, is certainly better for the economy.
The spread effect of housing market is very high because of exactly what you said. Somebody buy a house, and particularly if it's a brand new one, then they need all those stuff to be added. But even if they are not buying it anew, they still update stuff that is broken and stuff like that to improve what is going on. But the interesting part to me as an economist is looking at the interest rates that have went up very, very rapidly initially, and then sort of as if they gave up going up. So there has to be some change in the market because the Federal Reserve is reducing its balance sheet, which basically means it is taking some of those papers that it printed years ago out of circulation. So high-powered money is reduced, and also the bonds and stuff that they bought, they are slowly, many of them get to maturity and they automatically become cash. So as a result of all of that, we are looking at a smaller circulation of money in the system, and the economy is growing very, very rapidly. This usually is a recipe for interest rates continuing to go up.
Well, you still have a flight to quality. So when you look at the 10-year Treasury, a lot of the investment policies of large for-profit corporations that have most of the cash on their balance sheet, they have to be invested in something that's stable. And the gold standard for that is the 10-year Treasury. And so whether you can buy Treasuries in other countries, but the largest bond market is here for our Treasuries. There's other high-quality places like Japan and Germany, but no one has the availability and the inventory of treasuries like we have in the U.S. So I think some of that's the flight to quality. If you look at the 10-year treasury, it does make for an unusual circumstance, and it's not always a good sign for the economy when you have overnight rates, which the prime rate now being at 5.5%, and you have longer term rates less than that. That is a challenge. Yes. And as you know, as an economist, that could also spell out a recession in the future.
It's inverse. That's called the inverse yield curve, when the very short term pays higher than the longer term, and that is definitely not good for the health of the economy. And that is a serious issue as we are going forward with the changes in the economy. And it is interesting to look back at last year, and we had a good economy, ninth year of recovery moving on. And then we had a major booster, which were double tax breaks coming in corporate and personal. And we had a significant boost in the economy second quarter. And then we go to third quarter and we see it really diminished. And then fourth quarter forecasts are lower. And the first quarter used to be about 2.5. But now after the government shutdown, the expectations are maybe 2.1 or 2.2. So we are looking at a change really back to where it was, about around 2%, 2.5%.
And perhaps what you can apply from your numbers to looking again at December, where, you know, businesses might have been putting off some purchases. While it's still a good trend overall, if they've taken a pause, they might have looked at, you know, especially the small business owners that are really the ones behind their companies, you know, what the what the stock market did in December. Now, January was the best in 30 years, but I think everybody would like to forget December. So it could be that the time that you were surveying the folks, it was a little bit of wait and see because their own personal net worth was, you know, on paper, declined quite a bit in that month. So hopefully we get back on track. I think the bigger story is if they can hire the people, then they need the so if the business is there and they can hire the person, then they need the extra truck. So there might be a correlation there too on some of the equipment purchases. Now, I would, you know, flip the coin on manufacturing. If you can't hire the person, you might invest in the automated machine.
Right.
So it could go both ways there.
Yeah, the automation that it's coming, it's beyond a just the machines that are coming. With everybody talks about AI, artificial intelligence. I tell my students always that the machines are not intelligent. They are really dumb as a doornail. They are doornails. They're metals. They don't do anything. They don't have intelligence. And it's not artificial. It's a very real intelligence is the person who wrote the program.
Right.
It is the process, the machine, the program makes the machine capable of learning process as it is going through because of events as they are happening. The simplest one are these new cars that drive on their own between lanes. So they see the two lines and they drive between them. And they correct as they get close to one, turn to the other. And the program constantly checks for that correction. For example, if it gets close to one of the lanes and turns 5 degrees and sees, oh, it got to the other one, next time it corrects for 2.5 degrees and corrects as it goes through. This type of correction is something which we associated to human intelligence historically, that we see something and we turn the wheel. Okay, we turned it too much, we correct for that. Machines were beforehand incapable of that because they had a set program and they would follow that. This response to event as it's happening is relatively new. That's why I called artificial intelligence. You buy something on Amazon and instantly you get all of these things. Well, everybody who bought this thing bought the other item too. They offer you other products and stuff like that because the program is written such that it does. A lot of marketing is moving in that environment to become very, very personal. And this is becoming narrower and narrower and narrower. Eventually, it would be that they just look at Josh and Cameron and say, oh, he wants this sort of thing. Not everybody who bought this. He bought these things before, so chances are he would buy it.
Well, getting back to your car example, if your car knows that you stop at Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, first thing, you know, sometime in the a.m. hours on your commute Monday through Friday, you know, the navigation's going to recommend, oh, you're passing a Dunkin' Donuts.
So true.
On a personal level, and I think all of us overthink small purchases, whether it's, I remember buying a carriage for my kids, you know, a stroller, and I just wish Google would know when I make a purchase so it can stop showing me. I've already been through that process. I already bought that. I've moved on to something. But they seem to get stuck in those ads.
Yeah, and this is what is changing a lot of aspects of the market. This alongside the fact that population of the labor force is becoming much older. We're looking at people above the age of 65 in labor force, and they, during this century, last 18 years, they increased from being 3% of the total labor force to 6%. That's a sizable increase in the numbers. And when we look at something like that, it means that there were only 4 million people above the age of retirement actually working back at 2000, and now there are 10 million, and that is a large amount. On the other side of the coin, people age of 25 and 50 have dropped from 71 to about 64%. So there are fewer of them, at least percentage-wise, in the labor force. So even the shape of the labor force is changing, and part of that is because there are, to use a 1950s version of concept, is most of the jobs are indoors and don't involve heavy lifting. So you are at the age of 70, you still can sit down behind the terminal and type a computer program. That is a change that is coming to the environment. Instant replay in football is, again, another thing that it's coming. And I have no doubt that this will also continue to encroach on the part of referees, and the extent to which the referees will make the judgment calls right away and move on. And is there would be a super referee that would look at these things and from time to time says, "Oh, guys, stop that one. Now look at the instant replay," so that will not slow down the game every single play, but also there will be an overlook because of the technology coming in.
Yeah, and what you saw, I think, during what led to this initially was the college, you know, graduation rate. It seemed like, you know, parents didn't want their children to go into the trades necessarily, and they may right. push them into the college path, which is fine, but it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of high paying opportunities out there with people with the right skill set, whether it's the welders that we spoke about, the trades which really need people, and then the construction trades, which mm-hmm. those aren't going to be outsourced anytime soon. Those yep. those jobs are here, and they're here to stay. I know Jack Funder and his group over at Manufacturers Resource mm-hmm. Center has been trying to get out and with a really strong outreach to, you know, create an interest in manufacturing. So I hope those initiatives really, you know, get some traction, and because the jobs are there, and we do make things in this country, and we need people who have the skill set to make them.
Oh, that's very true. It's the changes that are happening are always that happened in 1850s. 50% of every person who had a job in the United States was a farmer, was in agriculture. Now 2%. That took a long time for that to happen. Manufacturing was a very, very large component coming in through, particularly from 1950s, coming all the way to the around 1970s, end of 1970s, where there was a large component, percentage-wise, expanding. But from then on, it has been going down. Technology is taking a lot of these things. So as we are moving, the combination of all of these things are giving us a new environment. It's not that there are fewer people who have jobs in the United States because the farmers dropped from being 50% of the labor force to 2%. There are a lot more jobs. It's just that moved to the into different entities. The first areas that most farmers moved into was called manufacturing. Now that manufacturing is also not attracting as many percentage-wise, is dropping in terms of number of employees it has. People who design these machinery, equipment, all of these things are expanding very, very rapidly. So that's where I see our movement going. And in terms of banking, what do you see? That where is your loans to capital loans in particular? That is a sign of where the future will be.
We're cross-segment in the Lehigh Valley. I think we represent a lot of the companies that you see around here, and we have a very diverse mix. So I'll have manufacturers, distributors, mm-hmm. professional services, and where I really see a lot going on is construction. I have a lot of contracting clients, and that's where it's about having first get the job, then get the equipment, then get the person. And it's putting it all together so you can deliver it. And with all the the large commercial construction projects going on, it's just trying to deliver projects on time. And that's the real challenge with the labor.
Well, that is a very interesting process. Obviously, everybody has to go through that. It is interesting to be in this position in a boom, and I repeat this word boom because I don't think that it will stay forever. And at least while we are in that environment, we should recognize that this is not the norm. The way that our economy is working is not the norm right now. It is the top of a hill.
Yeah, I know. It'd be interesting if we get something with infrastructure passed, because that's going to be a real challenge again with the labor market the way it is, and mm-hmm. and construction materials. I mean, not only that, you have the fires out in California. These are all replacement value for, and the insurance companies are going to replace the homes. Yeah. That's driving up all of the other costs. We have timber tariffs and other things. So construction costs are certainly on the rise, and I think it's an opportunity and a challenge both at the same time.
That is very true. I mean, the disasters like the hurricanes and fires are disastrous for people, and tragic. And it, because of the damage that it creates, mm-hmm. Afterwards, it will produce an opportunity for, exactly as you mentioned, for new buildings. And you are right, the infrastructure bill, if it passes now, would have a lot less effect because of availability of labor is very, very tight. And as a result of it, it would require, it would cause basically significant increases in variety of different costs. Okay. I want to close by saying that all of the data and indicators that we talked about are showing the economy is doing well. None of them indicates a recession anytime soon. However, all of them, including the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index, indicate an increase in the level of uncertainty. That in and as of itself cannot be good for the economy. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.